next two poems are sort of walking around New York type poems, which I like to write. And I think the events in them are quite explicable. And you know, it isn't just what I see, but what I'm thinking about while I'm walking too. First one is called Poem. Lana Turner has collapsed. I was trotting along and suddenly it started raining and snowing and you said it was hailing, but hailing hits you on the head hard, so it was really snowing and raining and I was in such a hurry to meet you, but the traffic was acting exactly like the sky and suddenly I see a headline, Lana Turner has collapsed. There's no snow in Hollywood, there's no rain in California. I have been to lots of parties and acted perfectly disgraceful, but I never actually collapsed. Oh, Lana Turner, we love you, get up. And the next poem I'm going to read is simply called Poem, and it's occasioned just by personal feeling. Hate is only one of many responses. True, hurt and hate go hand in hand. But why be afraid of hate? It is only there. Think of filth. Is it really awesome? Neither is hate. Don't be shy of unkindness either. It's cleansing and allows you to be direct, like an arrow that feels something. Out and out meanness, too, lets love breathe. You don't have to fight off getting in too deep. You can always get out if you're not too scared. An ounce of prevention's enough to poison the heart. Don't think of others until you have thought of yourself are true. All of these things, if you feel them, will be graced by a certain reluctance and turn into gold. If felt by me, will be smilingly deflected by your mysterious concern.
That's Frank O'Hara. He's a friend of ours now. We like him. He's going to be our buddy. I liked him. I read a little bit about him. I thought maybe I'll talk about this guy and what are poems. Hey, what the hell's going on with your week, guys? I think it's been 2 weeks since I did one, but you know what? I don't think it's my fault. I think I lost a week of time. Something happened. Last thing I remember, I was going to get a slushie at Turkey Hill. That's a convenient mart here in Pennsylvania. Something's going on there in general. None of the products are Turkey Hill products anymore. They're still called Turkey Hills. They got a turkey head outside. But when you go in and you buy a coffee or you buy a bag of nuts or you buy a kettle cooked chip, it all says Cumberland Farms. Welcome to Cumberland Farms. And you can buy bags of coffee that say Cumberland Farms. Like, but they're from a gas station. So, what does it matter, really? You know what I mean? Cumberland Farms coffee. Could you imagine going to someone's house, sitting down? You want a coffee? Yeah, sure, what do you got? Cumberland Farms. Like, isn't that just a bag stuff from the gas station? Not that I'm judging what people got for coffee in the coffee world, but my God. My friend Nick Haribut used to come over to my house, weed whack my backyard on occasion. When I asked him to, because God knows I couldn't. And one time he was drinking a cup of coffee in my kitchen, and another friend was there. And he sipped his coffee, and he said, yeah, coffee's good here, but it's a little strong. As though he was in an actual cafe. Hey, but what I got to tell you is, you know, there's characters. There's characters in life. There's these characters all over Wilkes-Barre and Edwardsville and Kingston and all the different areas in this area. And the other day I was bartending at As I Will, and I'm sitting there and this lady comes in. She kind of wobbles in. She's one of these people that has CPOD. She's got CPOD bad and she's always going... And then she'll take a big puff of an inhaler. So it's like... And then she'll smoke a Sonoma 1000. She'll smoke it right to the butt. And she said she sits down with her... Somehow this lady's like a large woman. CPOD. CPOD. Is it that? Am I saying that right? CPOD? CPOD. It's like a Jeopardy commercial. They're always like, if you have CPOD, take Lamentra. And then they play some song by the Supremes, you know, from the 1960s. Oh, Slamantra. Oh, something like that. I don't know. It is always like that, isn't it? Every Every pill produced in America comes with a 60s R&B song. So it's always like, this pill will cause vomiting, diarrhea, stomach cramps, possible death. And it's like, in the background, it's like, sugar pie, honey punch. You know that I love cilantro. Sugar pie, honey punch. You may throw up your eyeballs right out of your fucking head. You know I love cilantro. That's what it's like in America today. Anyway, CPOD lady comes in, and her boyfriend is about this, about 20 years younger, 6 foot tall, wears a do-rag and a wife beater, and constantly tells me he's going to build a giant Boba Fett helmet out of spare lumber that he finds on the street. So these are the characters. Assembled on the other end of the bar, just the regulars, white-haired Bill and $2 Bob. You know? And CPOD lady says, oh, did you hear what happened to Bicycle Randy? And do-rag, wife beater, Boba Fett out of Woodman says, fucked up, Jake. Fucked up what happened to Bicycle Randy. I said, I don't even know Bicycle Randy. They said, you know Bicycle Randy. He rides around on a bicycle. You know him. I said, I've seen a lot of guys on bicycles. I don't particularly know this fella. He's got a ponytail, Jake. He's got a ponytail. Bicycle Randy. I said, I don't know Bicycle Randy. They said, well, Bicycle Randy's been hanging down Joe's garage. This is my life. This is the kind of stories that I have to hear, that I have to process. So, I said, I don't know. I don't know. I said, where's Joe's garage? It's behind the abandoned lot across from Bud's Pizza, where they just built that statue of a gear. I said, okay, I know what you're talking about. And it's all nonsense, right? Like, if you live in a different world, a different time, if you were listening to this conversation, and even if you didn't know these people, you wouldn't know what the hell they were talking about. I barely did. So I said, what happened to Bicycle Randy? They said, well, Black Mike was pissed. I don't know Black Mike either, but I assume Black Mike is just a black guy named Mike. So I guess Black Mike was walking by Joe's garage, and he flicked a cigarette butt in the lawn where Bicycle Randy had just cleaned up for a few dollars, probably to buy a 40 at a local bar. Bicycle Randy says, Black Mike, you shouldn't be throwing cigarette butts on the lawn like that. Well, Black Mike didn't like this at all. So he picked up a fucking hammer and hit Bicycle Randy in the head with it. Bicycle Randy goes down. He drops and catches himself with his hands. Well, Black Mike sees an opportunity. He bashes both of Randy's hands, breaking them. Finally, one of these doofuses that hangs outside Joe's garage, I guess, stands up and says, Black Mike, you're going to kill him if you keep hitting him with the hammer. Black Mike sees reason, walks down the street, and begins to drink at a bar for the next few hours. No one reports this at all, just to me. They don't go to the police and report to anyone. So I said to COPD lady, I said to Tank Top Boba Fett Head Mask Wood Guy, I said, well, what happened? Was it not reported? Was no one going to do anything about this? Isn't Randy hurt? They said, oh, Randy's very hurt. But that just goes to show you, you don't fuck with Black Mike. So, if you're ever in the Wilkes-Barre area, don't fuck with Black Mike. Just a word to the wise. Hey, when we come back, more Frank O'Hara. We're going to dive into his life. We're going to find out about a lot of stuff here. What happened to me last week? Was I abducted by aliens? Jimmy Carter, only president who is on record saying that he saw a UFO. Okay, we'll be back. And you know who else I learned about last week? The Wolfman. I guess he used to hang down the Pumpy, they told me. The Pumpy is, I guess, a little watering hole up on a hill where people would fish. And Wolfman would hang up there, and he'd move all the logs out of the way for the people. Well, I guess one of Wolfman's buddies stole a bunch of tires, drove down to Philly and stole all these tires. And the Wolfman ends up going to the county jail about it, as though he was part of it. He wasn't even there, but they round the Wolfman up. And when the Wolfman's interrogated, he admits to 176 crimes he did not commit. They told me that. After they were talking about Black Mike and Bicycle Randy and all that, they said, yeah, well, you know about the Wolfman. Remember the Wolfman? And then, it ended up being that he admitted to 176 crimes he did not commit. There you go. Hey, Frank O'Hara. Francis Russell Frank O'Hara. was an American writer, poet, and critic, a curator of the Museum of Modern Art. O'Hara became prominent in New York City's art world. O'Hara is regarded as a leading figure in the New York School, an informal group of artists, writers, and musicians who drew inspiration from jazz, surrealism, abstract expressionism, action painting, and contemporary avant-garde art movements. O'Hara's poetry is personal in tone and content and has been described as sounding like entries in a diary. What happens? He's born Frank O'Hara, the son of Russell Joseph O'Hara and Catherine Broderick, was born on March 27, 1926 at Maryland General Hospital in Baltimore. So he's one of them Baltimore poets. Something about people being born in Baltimore and the way they write poetry, it is often kind of, it feels like it's journalistic. It feels like it's muscular, you know. Your Carl Shapiro's, if you will. He grew up believing he had been born in June, but in fact had been born in March. His parents disguised his true date of birth because he was conceived out of wedlock. So Russ and Kath, they probably got it on in the back of a station wagon, and she got pregnant. They said, "Hey, you know what? We better just say that that he was born in June, so nobody in town's like rolling their eyes." You know how they were back then. They were so concerned about everything back then, everything. Oh, did you hear? Oh, did you hear? Shut the fuck up. He studied piano at the New England Conservatory in Boston from 1941 to 44, and then goes to serve in the U.S. Navy in the South Pacific and Japan as a sonar man on the destroyer of the USS Nicholas during World War II. You know, do you have in your life, do you try to hold on to onto the family history, the sources? I was just thinking about that the other day. Someone told me, I think my mom told me a long time ago, my grandfather, he served in the South Pacific, but he was a flamethrower man. He had the flamethrower on. That's a weird fact. I threw that out at my girlfriend the other day, and she was like, kind of like, what? How do you know that? Just listen, absorb. Like a sponge I am. Like a moldy sponge. Another thing my mother told me was, if your sponges stink, throw them in the microwave for a little bit. With the funding made available to veterans, he attended Harvard University, where artist and writer Edward Gorey was his roommate. O'Hara was heavily influenced by visual art and contemporary music, which was his first love. He remains a fine piano player for most of his life. So he would actually go, and when he would see, he'd meet new people that knew him for a little bit, he'd just start playing like Rachmaninoff and blowing them away. And they'd be like, "Oh, you can play piano, can you? Can you, Frankie?" His favorite poets were Arthur Rimbaud, and while at Harvard, he met John Asherbury and began publishing poems in the Harvard Advocate. Despite his love for music, he changes his major and graduates from Harvard in 1950 with a degree in English. He then attended graduate school at the University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, where he wins a Hopwood Award and receives a master's degree in English literature. In his early career, he moves to old New York City, home of the poets, and he gets this roommate, and he falls in love with him, and he's his lover for 11 years on and off. Guy's name's Joe Lesore. It was during this time that he began teaching at the New School as well. O'Hara was active in the art world, working as a reviewer for Art News, and in 1960 was assistant curator of painting and sculpture at MoMA. There he makes a bunch of artist friends. Paint and artist friends kind of types. Mike Goldberg, Grace Hartigan, Alex Katz are amongst these artists. Well, O'Hara's poetry is generally autobiographical. It tends to be based on his observations of New York life rather than exploring his past. In his introduction to the collected poems of Frank O'Hara, Donald Allen says that Frank O'Hara tended to think of poems as a record of his life. Is apparent in much of his work. O'Hara discussed this aspect of his poetry in a statement for Donald Allen's The New American Poetry. "What is happening to me, allowing for lies and exaggerations, which I try to avoid, goes into my poems. I don't think my experiences are clarified or made beautiful for myself or anyone else. They're just there in whatever form I can find them. My formal stance is found at the crossroads where what I know and can't get meets what is left of that I know and can bear without hatred. It may be that poetry makes life nebulous, events tangible to me, and restores their detail. Or conversely, that poetry brings forth the intangible quality of incidents, incidents, which are all too concrete and circumstantial, or each on specific occasion, or both all the time. My cat's purring right in my ear, and I said incidents like that, and I go, incident, and she looked at me, she's like, oh, God, what the hell's wrong with you? I eat a little bit of a piggy. That's just meat wrapped in cabbage, and it made it so I couldn't say the word incident. If you had ever had a piggy, if you ever had a good old piggy, you'll know what I'm saying. His initial time in the Navy during his basic training at Sampson Naval Training Center in upstate New York, along with earlier years spent at St. John's High School, began to shape a distinguished style of solitary observation that would later inform his poems. Immersed in regimented daily routine, first Catholic school, then the Navy, he was able to separate himself from the situation and make witty and often singular studies. Sometimes these were cataloged for use in later writing, or perhaps more often put into letters. This skill of scrutinizing and recording during the bustle and churn of daily life would later be one of the most important aspects that shaped O'Hara as an urban poet, writing off the cuff. In 1959, he wrote a mock manifesto originally published in the New York City Magazine called Personism, a Manifesto, in which he explains his position on formal structure. I don't like rhythm, all that stuff. You just go on your nerve. If someone's chasing you down the street with a knife, you just run. You don't turn around and shout, give up. I was a track star from melanoma prep, he says in response to academic overemphasis on form. As for measure and other technical apparatus, that's just common sense. If you're going to buy a pair of pants, you want them tight enough so everyone will want to go to bed with you. There's nothing metaphysical about that. So there you go. His poetry shows influences of abstract expressionism, surrealism, Russian poetry, and poets associated with French symbolism. Frank O'Hara met, a little bit about his personal life here. Frank O'Hara met Joe Lasore in 1951. The two maintained a relationship until 1965, living together on and off from 1955 to 1965. From 1959 to 1963, the two lived at 441 East 9th Street in the East Village, known throughout his life for his extremely sociability, passion, and warmth. O'Hara had hundreds of friends and lovers throughout his life, many from the New York and poetry worlds. Soon after arriving in New York, he was employed at the Museum of Modern Art, selling postcards at the admission desk, and then he began taking writing seriously. He meets his longtime partner, Vincent Warren, in the summer of 1959. Warren, a Canadian ballet dancer, was the inspiration for several of O'Hara's poems, including Having a Coke with You. Warren died on October 25th, 2017, 51 years after O'Hara's death. In the early morning hours of July 24th, 1966, O'Hara was struck by a Jeep on Fire Island Beach after the beach taxi in which he had been riding with a group of friends broke down in the dark. He died the next day of a ruptured liver, and attempts to bring negligent homicide charges against 23-year-old driver were unsuccessful. Many of O'Hara's friends felt the local police had conducted a lax investigation to protect one of their own locals. He's buried at Green River Cemetery in Long Island. The painter Larry Rivers, a longtime friend and lover, delivered one of the eulogies. So there you go. He's cool. And I just want to say he's a fan of William Carlos Williams, he's influenced by. He likes him a lot. And who doesn't? You know, so that's something we probably all have in common with Frank O'Hara, is that he likes William Carlos Williams. It's been sad in America lately, hasn't it? It's been dreary. You got all the horrible things that are happening all around the goddamn place that we can hardly breathe anymore. I think that we should listen to one of his poems about love, you know? Maybe brighten up our day. Maybe feel pretty good about something. And then we come back. Maybe I'll tell you about that Jimmy Carter UFO account. And it'll just be keep being a weird episode of What Are Poems, you know? Okay, I'll be back. Frank O'Hara. Oh, this, I like anything that has Coca-Cola in it. As far as it goes with like, just that American symbolism, the way that Coca-Cola is a stand-in for all of America, the feelings of a wanton early relationship sharing a Coke. So this is Having a Coke with You by Frank O'Hara. And it's a love poem, folks. But it's a different kind of love poem. It's not one of them sappy shits that, like, you know, some of our other buddies might write. This one's a little bruisier. Go ahead, Frank.
The poem's called Having a Coke with You. It's even more fun than going to Saint Sebastian, Irun, Ondai, Biarritz, Bayonne, or being sick to my stomach on the Travessera de Gracia in Barcelona. Partly because in your orange shirt you look like a better, happier Saint Sebastian. Partly because of my love for you, partly because of your love for yogurt, partly because of the fluorescent orange tulips around the birches, partly because of the secrecy our smiles take on before people in statuary. It is hard to believe when I'm with you that there can be anything as still, as solemn, as unpleasantly definitive as statuary when right in front of it, in the warm New York 4 o'clock light. We are drifting back and forth between each other like a tree breathing through its spectacles. And the portrait show seems to have no faces in it at all, just paint. You suddenly wonder why in the world anyone ever did them. I look at you, and I would rather look at you than all the portraits in the world, except possibly for the Polish rider occasionally. And anyway, it's in the Frick, which thank heavens you haven't gone to yet so we can go together the first time. And the fact that you move so beautifully more or less takes care of futurism. Just as at home, I never think of the nude descending a staircase or, at a rehearsal, a single drawing of Leonardo or Michelangelo that used to wow me. And what good does all the research of the Impressionists do them when they never got the right person to stand near the tree when the sun sank? Or for that matter, Marino Marini, when he didn't pick the rider as carefully as the horse. It seems they were all cheated of some marvelous experience, which is not going to go wasted on me, which is why I'm telling you about it.
He's really a New York character. I don't know if you can hear it, but there's like taxis beeping in the background. He's just one of these people that is New York, and New York is him, and they're symbiotic in the way that, you know, Black Mike is Wilkes-Barre and Wilkes-Barre is Bicycle Randy. So I'm glad we made those points in the beginning, because we could kind of tell the kind of people that people are once people are the city that they live in, right? If you're going to check out Frank O'Hara's work, I suggest Lunch Poems. It's a book of poetry by him, published in 1964 by Lawrence Ferlinghetti Getty, who we know pretty well from the City Lights Bookshop. The collection was commissioned by Ferlinghetti Getty as early as 1959, but O'Hara delayed in completing it, and I like this. Ferlinghetti Getty would badger O'Hara with questions like, "How about lunch? I'm hungry." "Cooking," O'Hara would reply. It's a famous one. Someone was reading it in Mad Men. Remember Mad Men? The men weren't mad. They were in advertising, which made them mad. "That's what the money's for." Remember Don Draper said that? "That's what the money's for." I'm always afraid I'm going to get sued. Who would sue me? Would Matthew Weiner, the creator of Mad Men, sue me if I played a clip of "That's what the money's for"? Oh, see? Come at me, Wiener. Is it Weiner or Wiener?
"That's the way it works. There are no credits on commercials.
But you got the Clio.
It's your job. I give you money, you give me ideas.
You never say thank you.
That's what the money is for. You're young. You will get... You're...
Thank you.
That's what the money is for."
Don Draper, you son of a bitch. Okay, Frank O'Hara, when I come back, we'll round this episode out, and we'll wait in patience to see if Matthew Weiner or Weiner will sue me over using a clip from Mad Men, and I will tell you about Jimmy Carter seeing that UFO when I come back on What Are Poems. You know what? We've did like close to 60 of these suckers, and I'm pretty sure I've talked about Jimmy Carter seeing the UFO before. Just quick, 2005, all of a sudden, one of the men looked up and said, "Look over to the west." There was a bright light in the sky. We all saw it. Then the light, it got closer and closer to us. And then I stopped. I don't know how far away, but I stopped beyond the pine trees. And all of a sudden, it changed color to blue. And then it changed to red. And then back to white. And we were trying to figure out what in the world it could be. And then it receded in the distance. That's Jimmy Carter in 2005 on the UFO he saw outside a golf course. It's kind of like a poem, isn't it? All of a sudden, one of the men looked up and said, "Look over in the west." And there was bright light in the sky, and we saw it. And the light, it got closer and closer to us. And it stopped. I don't know how far away, but it stopped beyond the pine trees. And all of a sudden, it changed color to blue. And then it changed to red, and then black to white. And we were trying to figure out what in the world it could be. And then it receded into the distance. Jimmy Carter's poem, "I saw a UFO at a golf course." I don't have a Jimmy Carter impression. I only have Bill Clinton. What's my Bill Clinton impression? Oh, yeah, I do it all the time. "I'm Bill Clinton. I'm Bill Clinton." Holy fuck. All right. You know what? I don't know. It's life, you know? This is what our poems... It's a roller coaster. I should have a plan. And then I don't. And then I just start talking and rambling. And some people listen to it and some don't. And that's the way it goes. "Hey, Bill. Hey, Bill Clinton. What? Why don't you play us out on the old saxophone?" "Okay, I guess I could." Go ahead, Bill Clinton. This is Bill Clinton. "It's the 90s, baby. I'm playing a saxophone. Okay. Hey, until next time, folks. Peace and love. Peace and love. Beef jerky."